Let's get right to this morning's recording. I wish I had saved that little conversation that just happened because it made me laugh. See if I can... I said to Fred, hey, before we get started, you know, the main show this morning, I wanted to talk about somebody that I know that died. And you said, do you know him? And I said, I don't think so, but he was a big influence on me. And you responded,
Jeffrey Epstein?
You see, that's why we like doing a program like this. Where do you get that kind of fun? You know, you don't get that kind of fun in a regular job.
Yeah, you don't get that kind of fun in retirement, sitting around doing nothing.
I'd like to talk about the death of a serial killer that influenced me. No, Fred.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't a serial killer.
What was he? Jeffrey Epstein. I was like, am I thinking of? That's even funnier.
Funny. And it was still funny.
That's right.
No, I got Epstein it Island. How many times were you there?
No, I know. You know, now I feel silly, but I still laughed at it.
Did you fly in the plane?
I was thinking Jeffrey Dahmer. Yes, yeah. I flew on the plane with Clinton and Trump and all of us and Prince Andrew.
Yeah. Apparently, that's the plane that Trump's flying around in now.
Yeah. They've repurposed the, what do they call that plane?
I forget. They had a name for it. On BritBox, there's a show. It's about British scandals, and they're docudramas. And there's one about the Prince Andrew interview with the BBC.
Yeah.
And how uncomfortable that was and the fallout. It was quite enjoyable.
I saw a movie on Netflix called Scoop that's all about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, the guy that I looked up to when I was a young broadcaster, kind of like, you know, for you would be Pete and Geets, the fact that, you know, they were sort of the big morning show in Toronto, and you got to work with them. And for me, as a little Jewish broadcaster in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, we used to listen to things called air checks, and they were little, you know, bits of disc jockeys from all over North America, and without the music, it would just be the guy talking. And there were people in. There was a guy in Chicago I liked. And then there was this guy in Vancouver that I looked up to. His name is Doc Harris. Dan, did you ever work with Doc?
No.
Do you know who I'm talking about, though?
Yeah, totally, yeah. I worked with his son, or wasn't Doc Harris? Didn't he have a son?
I don't think he did, actually, Dan. Okay. But nevertheless, you know, when I was... So when I was 17, 18, 19, and then 20, I get hired to go work at the radio station that Doc Harris... is the morning man of, and I had listened to hours and hours of his tapes. And I'm going to be honest with you, as a little broadcaster in Moose Jaw, I, you know, sort of took on some of his, you know, I kind of did my impression of him. And for a long time, I was sort of doing Doc Harris. And then I got to work with him. I was the all-night guy. I worked midnight to 6, and then I would stick around and sit in the studio and watch him. And then sometimes, because he used to get high on the air, Fred. It was very cool in 1980. He would get high. I mean, everyone knew it, but no one cared because he was the big guy. So
right on.
My memory of him is he was much older than me, but he died recently at age 76. So if you're doing the math, he was 12 years older than me. So, but when I was 20, a 32-year-old Doc Harris seemed like, you know, experienced and a man of the world. And anyway,
still a kid.
Still a kid, exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it didn't really, you know, it affected me a little bit on the weekend because I started feeling a little nostalgic and, you know, and thinking about 76, not very old. And I really hadn't thought about Doc Harris in years, but he was a big part of my early morning man development. And, you know, I did this thing on our little program back in the day called The Humble Report.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a direct ripoff, the name at least, of Doc Harris's. He had a thing every morning called The Harris Report. And I thought you would be interested, maybe not just a little flavor of what this guy sounded like when I was a younger broadcaster.
At CFMI, and time for The Harris Report. One of the more obvious signs of the collapse of Western civilization. Not a whole lot happened in Vancouver over the weekend, but we'll tell you about it anyway. It was a good weekend for Zeke Assistance of Surrey.
I got 420 more signatures on my petition to reinstitute the death penalty for people who mow their lawns at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning.
A new breed of tougher than ever mugger is at work in Vancouver.
And I used to tell him that. I mean, I started doing the Humble Report in 1982 when I moved to Calgary. And I'd run into him from time to time at the odd radio thing, and I'd say, hey, I'm doing the Humble Report as a tribute to you. But anyway, I got this. It's funny how that happens. You know, you get a little nostalgic, and I was... It didn't bum me out as much as I started thinking about, you know, that time in my life and how, you know, this guy was a huge influence on how I wanted to be. Not only because it made me want to be a morning man, but the kind of morning man that I kind of wanted to be. Someone that did bits. Because that's what he was all about.
Right. How long has he been retired? How long did he stay on the air? Do you know?
Quite a long time, I think. Like, you know, well into his 60s, late 60s. He ended up doing, like, you know, music shifts. And, you know, his heyday was long, long time ago, you know?
Yeah. And he died at 76 this summer, you said?
Quite recently.
Okay. Which isn't old, unfortunately. No, it's interesting to reminisce. And we often talk about how this comes up. I was saying to Darren, over the weekend, we started reminiscing a bit about CFNY, and I said, you know, I've been thinking lately of the all-star CFNY dead lineup. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, Peter Griffin's dead. He'd be the morning man. Midday, JR, he just died. And he was always the midday guy. Afternoons, James Scott, he's dead. He was the afternoon.
Well, and Don Burns in the afternoon, too.
Well, Don Burns, but you didn't let me finish my lineup.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Right? So afternoons, James Scott. Evenings, Marty. Overnights, a guy named Nick Charles, who traditionally was overnight. And then... Don Burns could be the PD, swing guy, right? And it's scary when you look back and you think that whole lineup for the day and they're all gone. So I know what you're thinking or how you're feeling when you look back on something like that. Because, you know, at the time you're enjoying it, you're not of the mindset that, as Pete Griffin used to say, fuck it, soon we'll all be dead.
Oh, yeah.
But there you go. Soon we'll all be dead.
So this was Sunday when I read about the passing of Doc Harris.
Yes.
And like, really one of my first radio idols. Guy, you know, I'd imagine, little boy from Moose Jaw, I get hired to go from Moose Jaw to Vancouver, and now I'm working in the same building as this guy.
Right.
Like, it was mind-blowing for me. Then I got to do mornings. Within a year in Vancouver, I was doing mornings on the FM station. So not only am I in the same building as this guy that I looked up to, but I'm also doing mornings at the same time. And then I get hired to go to Calgary, and I started working with Dan Duran at the time.
Yeah.
Dan and I had already known each other from Moose Jaw, but at the time, Dan Duran was, I think, the production manager of the radio station that hired me, yes?
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
And I started thinking about those days, Dan and I and all these people I used to know that I hadn't thought of for a while. And I found it got me thinking. I go on, you know, YouTube, rabbit hole, and I found a sample of my show in Calgary in the fall of 1984. Mm-hmm. I'm 24 years old. Dan, at the time, I guess you were in your 60s. So,
yeah.
I just want to play a little bit of this because in 1984, my show began much like our show begins today.
The Humble Howard Show with the Radio Angel, Police Blotter, Pretty Darn Strange, and Movie of the Week. I'm Dan Duran along with Doug Gosin and Greg Bush and the Humco Orchestra. And now, here's Humble.
It's Donnie Iris and Aaliyah at Kick FM 107. It's 18 after 7 o'clock. Dee McLean is coming up with scoops. Jennifer Farney will help us through with traffic. We've got the new Humco product of the day in just a moment's time. I'm telling you, we have enough stuff on this show for 1.5 shows.
So that was the way my show began in the early 1980s. Just like it kicks off now.
Everything old is new again. Back to Vancouver for a second with that Doc Edwards. So he's your
Doc
hero.
Harris.
Doc Harris. Who's Doc Edwards?
I don't know.
Anyway. Doc Harris.
Who's Jeffrey Epstein? I thought he was a serial killer.
So you roll in there. What was that dynamic like? So he's your hero. He's doing AM, I guess. You're doing FM. Was he good to you?
Well, but first I did AM. I was the all-night guy before his show.
Right.
So I got to know him. He knew I looked up to him. I was a 20-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. And he let me. I asked him. I said, would you mind if I hung around for the first hour of the show? I did that almost every day. So by the time I got my own morning show, he was, he was nice to me. He was very, very kind to me.
Right.
But
so again, he was AM, and if you were FM.
Yes, I was the FM morning. Absolutely. I was 21 years old.
That was a meteoric
rise. Yes,
rise. I mean, to go from what you did in Moose Jaw to mornings, basically, after a year into mornings.
Oh no, it was ridiculous. By the time I got my first morning show, I'd only been on the radio for 4 years. Like it was, and the only reason I got a morning show is because FM in those days was considered like no one really cared, and so they thought they'd throw me on there because I was, was somewhat funny. But I've listened to the rest of that air check from 1984, Dan. As I said to you before we got started, I was throwing a lot of stuff at the wall. Like I really was. I threw a lot of stuff into every show. And it's one of those things you do when you're in your early 20s. It's all I did. Hours and hours I spent putting that show together.
And we had a lot of fun doing that too.
Yes, we did.
Remember, we were doing because I was a production director, that meant that I was in charge of the commercial production department. So I was sitting in front of a console, and the writers, so I was in charge of that department. That studio that I was out of, we figured out how to connect the two studios together for some of the bits that we were doing. So we had two studios on the go, making the program work. It was fun, yeah.
But you say throw a lot of stuff at the wall, which is excellent, because as we've said many times over the years, when we've thought of bits or concepts and it's like, I don't know. And it's like the audience really isn't that demanding. If they get a sense of fun, an air of fun, they're not as demanding as we might think they are. So obviously throwing stuff at the wall was the key to your success, because from that becomes gems, right?
Really? Well, yeah, and it was also a time in my life when that's all I was thinking of every day. It's all I wanted to do. The reason I left Vancouver and I took the job in Calgary was I knew that if I stayed in Vancouver, I wasn't going to be able to make as many mistakes as I did in Calgary. Like, I did every bit. I mean, I was going to send it, because you were a program director. I'll send you the link to this air check. You'll hear a lot of what, ended up being the Humble and Fred show from, some of the stuff I was doing in 1984.
But arriving in Vancouver at 21, too, I mean, that could have easily turned into, Howard's been in this market for 40 years.
Absolutely.
Fred,
I had people
he's the king of Vancouver radio. He's been here 40 years.
When I left there, I had people, including Doc, probably telling me I had one guy that I respected, not Doc, another guy that was older than me, probably mid-30s, said, you're making the biggest mistake of your life. Because people who go to Vancouver never leave Vancouver.
Right. And why did you exactly?
Well, two reasons. I got hired by this radio station. Dan was there. I knew Dan.
Well, that's a good idea to get hired by a radio
station. No. I got hired by CBC. I got a chance to do a kids' TV show in Calgary.
Oh, okay. Well, right.
That so it was a pretty sense. It was a pretty big opportunity for a 22-year-old. But people in Vancouver said to me, this is the biggest mistake you'll ever make in this business. They were wrong because they didn't predict that one day we'd sign a contract to go to the mix. In the meantime, Dan Duran,
this episode
everybody.
of Hummel and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Hummel and Fred studio in Toronto, from our Brampton facility featuring a soon-to-be-closed prestigious pool, Fred's just waiting for a sunny day and the appropriate amount of beer, and from a trailer in the Kawarthas with the Danis Duranis bust. I'm Dan Duran, broadcasting live from the Baldwin Sisters Zoom Theater.
Yeah.
And brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Bodog, our newest sponsor, Ridley Funeral Home, and Kelsey's Original Roadhouse. And now here are two men who believe Helene and now Hurricane Milton are controlled by Democratic weather lasers trying to punish people in the South so that Floridians will have to pay more for insurance and need more illegal immigrants to build things and make Republicans want to shoot the Donald. I think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hummel and Fred.
And Dan Duran starting this program in 2024. 40 years later, still doing the same nonsense. Steve Smith is someone that's been doing what he's doing for a very long time. He's had television programs, podcasts based on the television program. And now Steve wants to talk about an animated program and version of The Red Green Show. And he'll be our guest as well. Brad Jones will be talking funerals, all things death later on in this show. And as always, we appreciate you all being here.
Help me with something. So it was Hurricane Helene. I thought, doesn't the next one, shouldn't it begin with an I? I thought that's how it went. H-I.
Yeah, because there were some other ones in between.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That explains
rapid, rapid fire, some, you know, nameable storms came through, yeah, in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. You know that expression we were talking about in the spring, or maybe I brought it up on the show at some point about how, you know, oh, I didn't have this on my bingo card, or I didn't have that on my bingo card. You know, you aware of that now?
Yes.
Politicians politicizing hurricanes, disasters, and people's lives hanging in the balance. I did not have that on my 2024 campaign bingo card. You and I were discussing it before the show. It's not just Trump. It's the whole, like, it's this whole mythology now about how anything that doesn't happen in MAGA world is conspiratorial. It's universal. Again, it's not just the Republican Party. It's the actors that, on behalf of the Republican Party, making it seem like the government, yeah, FEMA in this particular case, isn't doing anything.
No, I know. And you have Republican governors who actually support Trump, will vote for him, saying, no, everything's fine. I know, it's just so evil. You know, traditionally in a situation like this, national disasters, whatever, politics is just laid to rest. A guy like Trump should just shut up and say nothing, or if he was smart, say, I talked to President Biden today just to let him know, is there anything I can do to help in my position as a former president? That would be the classy thing to do. But of course not, because he's an evil fuck. And it's, you know, and there's all sorts of examples through the ages of this happening, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, during an election, if something big happens, the guy, you know, the incumbent takes over, and the challenger either offers help or says nothing. But no, it's different. It's different now, and it's so sad. It is. It's sad because people are being harmed through this. But he doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't care about anybody.
And as I said to you, you know, this is a prime example of something I've said a few times, which is the people that are being harmed by this, his supporters, yes, are his supporters.
Mm-hmm.
They would be so much better off, less harmed by this and other policies, if they had never heard of this fucking asshole.
And let's, you know, in this situation, he's running to stay out of jail. So he's desperate, right? You talk about throwing stuff at the wall. he's doing whatever he can to stay out of jail. So he in his weird, demented mind, he thinks this strategy will help him win the White House to stay out of jail. I mean, this is unprecedented, too. Just think, the guy running for president, he's running to stay out of jail. I mean, we've never had this before either.
And that's where
the desperation comes from.
And by the way, Dan, this isn't Trump talk right now. This is just a couple guys shooting the shit about some current events that started with the hurricane. This is really more about the hurricane, Dan.
Yeah, it's a politicizing the hurricane. Well, you can go from there to DeSantis, right, where he's denying that the White House, he blocked the White House call, or he ignored the call from the White House. Who does that?
No, I said that's why. So funny you brought that up. I know I said that to Fred. I said that's just another example.
But then it gets worse. He says, I didn't know she called. Come on, you didn't know she called. That sounds worse. I think if the president phoned or the vice president phoned, somebody in your band
that's right.
Like somebody in your band of assholes would say, hey, by the way.
Yeah, FYI.
Yeah. I didn't notice my phone rang from the White House.
I was on another call when the White House called. But I want to go back to the idea, this notion that A, you're right, Trump doesn't give a shit. B, I'm right, the people that are being that are in this cult that are being affected by maybe not calling FEMA. You made a really good point, I thought, about it affects their psyche, it affects their mood. It's a horrible thing that's happened, and there's another one coming. Mm-hmm. But I've never, again, back to my bingo card, which is right now quite full. I'd never heard of this. It's unprecedented to politicize something like this in this fashion. Never seen it before.
No, and you know, and he's going full tilt boogie on it. Like every time he gets up in front of a crowd, he's telling the same lie. And even FEMA, like he's saying, people are only getting $750. That's the first packet. They give you $750 for right now.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of aid coming. So he takes sort of facts and twists them and lies about them. And again, you know, moderates or people in the middle are undecided. If you've got even anything larger than a pea brain, you're having the conversation that we're having right now. You know, like, what's he doing? So what? How does he think he's going to win over non-base with
no,
this?
I know. But
who knows? It's a funny country. It's a funny
country. I'm getting this sinking feeling now. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, with all the stuff going on, the fact that they've got so many people now in place, they've learned from what happened in 2020. I'm talking about the GOP heads. They've learned, and I'm starting to get this feeling. I don't think unless it's a landslide, I don't think she's going to win. I know that sounds strange. I don't think, even if she did win, even if it's by a little bit, they're going to block this. They're going to block the Electoral College vote somehow.
Well, you just got to hope at the end of the day, people in that position, even if they're in a position to reject it, will just put their country first. And you just got to hold on to that, how naive as it may be, that hope that that's what it comes down to, because that's what happened last time. But again, he has literally handpicked people to put in those positions.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's and to me, you know, it's like the perfect storm of stuff going against Kamala. It's like, you know, the hurricanes, the war in the Middle East. It's all these things that often sitting governments, no matter who they are, often blame for it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Okay, you're the sitting government. This is happening. It's your fault. I'm going in a different direction. That's what concerns me as well.
Okay, Dan, go ahead.
I don't want to be part of a world. I don't want my kids and my grandkids to be part of a world that has normalized a guy like Donald Trump.
Exactly.
I don't.
I've been thinking about, before I get to Dan, this isn't Trump talk, by the way. This is just catching up, talking about some current events.
Yeah. Because Trump's not on the schedule for today.
No, there's no Trump on the schedule. Yeah. But to your point about a world like this, you know, I keep thinking about what's going to happen. If he wins again, what's that world going to be like? Meantime, speaking of the Middle East, yesterday, to help commemorate October 7th, Donald Trump asked a rabbi if he wanted him to autograph his Bible or something. Yeah, it was like, it was
what?
Yeah,
it's, it was just some, on and on.
Is that some weird, awkward moment where, you know, he was at a function with some Jewish people? And by the way, yelling about how how if you're really a Jew, you spoke, you have all the Jew hate. He's going to get rid of all the Jew haters, was what he was yelling about yesterday. Anyway, he did something with a rabbi, had a book, and he wanted to know if the rabbi wanted an autograph. But the funniest thing he does is he ends this talk by playing the Village People YMCA. It's like,
oh, did he? Yeah.
Nothing says a somber tribute to the people that perished a year ago yesterday like throwing out some Village People, or because, as he once said, it really gets the people rocking. But the reason I made me laugh is, you know, the YMCA, it stands for Young Men's Christian Organization Association. Fuck. Yeah, okay, yeah. Guys, at the end of my speech here with all the Jew stuff, throw on YMCA.
Well, again, it just goes on and on and on and on. And, you know, we've said it many times. The other day I'm YouTubing and, you know, I land on Jimmy Kimmel. The first thing, he just starts laughing. He shows a couple of these things and goes, how is it? Looks in the camera and says, how is this still a race? Like, how is this close? What is going on here, America? Like, that, and that alone is just the buffoonery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? You know, when there's, and the slurred speech and the run-on sentences and the, and the disjointed points, and, you know, now his age is showing. I mean, and he'll just be entering a four-year term? Like, are you serious?
Well, that's the other thing I've been thinking about, too, is that if in the spring, leading up to and then including the debate with Trump, Joe Biden was under constant pressure from the media about him losing a step and his mental acuity and would he be fit to serve another 4 years. Meanwhile, now, this buffoon, again, Dan, this isn't Trump talk.
No.
This guy is not only slurring his speech, all this run-on saying, he's definitely showing his age. That New York Times article that Julie Fleming shared with us, you know, finally the New York Times waking up to the fact, you know, that Donald Trump is unhinged and possibly showing some major signs of mental degradation. How that isn't the lead story on every newscast is beyond me. But as you say, as Kimmel mentioned, the fact that it's even close is one of the craziest things.
And, you know, to bring it home, I'm very concerned because I'm done. I'm out on the Poilievre thing. These commercials he's running, you know, what do they call it? Maple MAGA or MAGA Maple. This fear-mongering commercials, I don't know if you've seen them, about how horrible Canada is, how horrible Canada has become. You know, it's that same strategy. I want no part of it. And honestly, you know, there's one wonderful thing about Canada, well, in the States too, you can, there's a third person to vote for, or a fourth or a fifth actually still on the ballot, but I'm totally into voting green. You know, I'll vote green. I will, because I'm not voting for that bastard. That sawed off little, like, you know, this fear-mongering and this whole model that he's taken from the United States, I want no part of it. And I don't give a shit about his policies, because I've often said, at the end of the day, policies, it always ends up the same shit anyway.
So yeah, of course.
If we're not going to lose decency in this country, I'll tell you.
I'm looking at, I can't find it. I just Googled Poilievre commercial. Showing results, meet Poilievre. That's an old one. I'll find it.
Yeah. Like, I'm just, hey, Dan, have you seen those commercials?
No, I have not yet, but I know how, I mean, he's taken a page out of Trump's book. And
when's Tony on again? Because I got to tell him, like, you know, come on, what are you doing?
Tony, when's Tony on again? Great question. I can answer that. We'll be with us the week after this one. So a week from Wednesday. By that time, I will have the commercial. But yeah, I'm not down for that either. I'm too old for it.
Elections are won and lost in the GTA. Of course, people at West love that stuff. It's not enough. Like, what are you doing? So if you're a conservative, if you're a normal conservative, you know, you're like a Liz Cheney or something going, well, wait a minute, what happened to the party that I supported? That's not the conservative, Canadian Conservative Party I've supported. What is that? I want no part of it. And, you know, that will be the test and the measure of Canada. Are we going to get sucked in like all the fucking morons down in the States? I would hope not.
Well, you'd hope not, but I don't want to launch into this. I ran into somebody. I'm just trying to be as obscure as possible. Somebody a little bit older than me, sort of your age, and in my golf world, I'll just say that. And we had there was a bit of a conversation about real Canadians. And I was like, what do you mean real Canadians?
Oh, Jesus.
And of course, what he means is not non-brown Canadians.
Yes.
And at first, I was a little bit taken aback because I'm like, oh, wow, I'm speaking to a real live racist. like real life.
Got
like,
one here, folks.
I got one. Yeah. And I kept calling him that during the day. Actually.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I did. You'd have been proud of me. I made it like I'm doing a bit, but I was not doing a bit. I kept saying, "Oh yeah, tell me more, racist guy's name." Mm-hmm. But he's definitely one of those people that will be receiving the message that this is a horrible country unless we take it back for real Canadians, unless the real Canadians are, you know, back where they're supposed to be, doing real Canadians, lining up at Tim Hortons.
Yeah, because, and it's so futile, because it's not going to change. This is Canada. Well, that, you know, this is the United States. It's 2024. The world is becoming smaller. There used to be 6 billion people on the earth. Now there's 8 billion. They have to go somewhere. You know what I mean? In the end, we have to share this world. It's only so big. So why can't people get their head around that? They actually really want to go back to a time. It's just so unrealistic because it's just not the way the world is now.
Agreed. But everybody, and you'll, I think this will resonate with you. Everyone is selfish, self-centered, is about themselves and their little world, which is why, you know, you've said it, I've said it, Dan said it. You know, the answers to climate change, the answers are actually easy. Mm-hmm. Implementing them is almost impossible because of what I just said. You know, here we are. I don't know, Dan, I've lost track of the once in a generation, once in 4,000 year hurricane. You know, Freddie and I were talking about this in our pre-show. Like this hurricane coming, Milton, on the heels of Helene. Is it Helen or Helene?
Helene. Yeah.
The fact that you're coming this close together is beyond astronomical in terms of the odds of it, but as you were saying, Freddie, they almost never, like Milton is going to possibly hit a very populated area.
Well, Tampa. Where it's going to land, they haven't had a direct hit in over 120 years or something. So the deniers will go, well, look, it happened 120 years ago. That's usually the comeback.
Yeah.
But they're saying that the ocean temperature off the coast of the Yucatan Peninsula there in Mexico, you know, is usually the warmest water in the ocean. They said it's really warm, like several degrees warmer right now. And that's how hurricanes start. So, and I would ask again, so if you want the United States or Canada to go back to the white 60s, which is unrealistic, How is denying climate change, how does that lead to anything good when you have the data that shows how warm the ocean is?
And look what Trump, you know, one of his great quotes. Yeah. Well, no, you're going to have more oceanfront property. Oh, great. Yeah. I don't know.
Which is stupid in itself, because as Dan said on the weekend when we had this conversation, there's not going to be more oceanfront property. It's just going to move up. The rest is going to be underwater. It's going to be actually, if you want to actually think about it, how is there going to be more? It's just going to move forward.
That's right.
So the existing one's going to be underwater. So technically, another stupid response.
Oh, yeah.
From a guy who could be the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how many more people have to come forward. I know some of the people that worked in his White House. People that worked for him. Wouldn't that be enough? Like, I know you're somewhere in the red states and you're thinking this guy is going to solve your problems, but the overwhelming evidence when people who have worked directly with him have come forward and said, this man is unfit to be the president. In fact, when the New York Times finally came out and endorsed him in their editorial a week ago, this is what they said. It's hard to imagine a candidate more unworthy to serve as president of the United States than Donald Trump. Unless voters stand up to him, Mr. Trump will have the power to do profound and lasting harm. The only patriotic choice for president is Kamala Harris.
Like, that just says it all. I mean, you got to put your country first. You know, and even this stuff about policy, I keep getting back on that. I mean, what's he saying? What detail is he giving? I mean, they keep slamming
Well, he's got a concept of a plan. That was my favorite quote.
They keep slamming her for not enough detail and not enough how. How are you going to do this? Well, from what I watch, she seems to explain her positions a lot better than he does. It's just bizarre.
It is bizarre.
And not to say hers will work, but at least she's explaining them. You know, and I forget what financial institute has come out and said his plan is going to lead to, like, way more national debt than hers is.
$5 trillion.
But they just, they put blinders on. It's like they don't want to hear this stuff. Because, again, you get back to racism, your racist buddy. It's all about racism. It's all about race.
Yeah.
That's why these people keep holding on to him, because they think he's going to give them the country that they had 20 years ago or 30 years ago. It's sickening.
By the way, Fred, to get back to the original part of this hurricane discussion that we're having right
yes,
now.
Yes, this is a hurricane discussion, Dan.
Hurricane Trump. Hurricane Trump. Right.
Hurricane so shithead.
After Helene, there was Isaac, there was Joyce, Kirk, and there was Leslie, and now we're at Milton. Those were storms that really didn't register. They weren't that famous. Okay. But Milton's going for the big one here.
Okay, that's true. We've had our rant. It's funny, though, because I thought when the federal election here happens and a liberal knocks on my door, you know, I'll give them a piece of my mind. But I think now it'll be worse if a conservative knocks on my door. Seriously, I'll say, you know, you're the guy that wants to represent me, you're buying into this crap from Polio? Get off my property.
Get off. Get off my property.
Get off my property.
Get away.
Seriously. Right now, you walk right off my property.
Get off.
Now.
Get off. Okay, well, listen, we've got Steve Smith standing by in the Zoom green room. Dan Duran will be supplying all the joy that Dan Duran can supply. The news coming up later. And, of course, we'll be talking with our friend from Ridley Funeral Homes, Brad Jones. But we do have a little work to do first, Frederick. Let's get that done, my friend.
Yeah, Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. If you have a small business, go to chamberplan.ca today. Get a free quote. A lot of small businesses have joined the Chamber Plan since Hummel and Fred started talking about it. Oh, several years ago now. And the reason we're still talking about it is because it's still working for small business. Oh, yes, it is. If you have a small business and you've thought about, you know, a benefits package for your business, go to chamberplan.ca, click on the badge there, get a free quote. You can buy in at different levels, maybe start slowly and build on your plan. That's what we've done. Oh, yeah, Hummel and Fred are covered by the Chamber Plan, and it's worked great for us. And it's the basics, prescriptions and a dental and some, therapies are involved, a mental health component, an HR component. It's all there. I mean, listen, I don't have enough time to tell you
there's
all that's available.
No.
All that's available through the Chamber Plan. That's up to you to check it out at chamberplan.ca.
Later on, Fred Mann will talk about some of the specific odds with Bodog. But first, what does Bodog have to say?
Feeling stuck on the sidelines?
Hey, watch where you're walking, man.
When life gives you too much to tackle?
Yeah, I'm going to need that draft tomorrow.
You know it's time to play. It's easy to find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Get the latest sports odds and free tips to help you go all the way this football season. Visit Bodog.net today. Hashtag make
this working?
Well, let me just introduce you officially. Yes, it is working, my friend.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, you sound great. Maybe just give me a little less microphone. That'd be good.
Any idea how I could do that? I got it. Here we go.
Yeah, just turn it down a little bit.
Says volume.
Yes, where it says volume would be good.
Okay, how do we do it? Volume.
You're doing a great job. Listen, welcome back to our program. Somebody that is, and I play this song because the rubber band man, it's all about flexibility. And who has been more flexible? Have you won the Order of Canada? I want to say Order of Canada winner.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have. Yep. Yeah. Who has been more flexible than the Order of Canada recipient? Deservedly so. I feel excited just finding that out. Welcome back to our show. It's Steve Smith. Hey, man.
Great to see you guys. We've been doing this a while, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. We've done 13 years of this podcast and 35 years of this radio show that we've been. Oh. I know. It's a lot.
That's a lot of getting up early.
Yeah, man.
Not to get too patriotic or sentimental, what is that like, though, when you receive the call? And where do you rank that? Receiving the Order of Canada, being recognized by your home and native land. How does that feel?
You know, I mean, to be glib, when they gave it to me, I thought it meant everybody was getting one. But it was, you know what, it was a super honor for me. My mother, who sadly has passed away since, I took her up there with me, and mm-hmm. she got to meet the Governor General, and that was a huge moment for her. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't go away. Like, it's mm-hmm. hanging in my office, and I have a little badge I wear to certain events. But no,
to be glib, but also, does it come with, are there benefits? Like, you know, the Nobel Prizes are being announced. That comes with a cash prize as well. Like, do you get free 407 or something? Is there like, you jump the queue at movies, you just show off the badge? Is there something?
I think you've forgotten what country we're in.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah.
The same benefits of doing a TV show is what you're saying.
Exactly, yeah. No, it's all good. It's all good. Yeah. I'm not going to complain. I've had a lot of great things happen to me. But, you know, honestly, number one, when I was touring, I did live tours for a while, and meeting the fans after the shows and the comments they would make, that's in my top five. You know, that's right up there with the Order of Canada, honestly. Mm-hmm.
And you know what a big thing is in our lives nowadays is how we're, after we're long gone, how are we going to be Googled?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Seriously. And, you know, when Steve Smith is Google, I mean, that will probably be right near the top, Order of Canada. So the legacy that gives you is something else. Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that to people who weren't aware.
Well, and you know, you talked about, you mentioned live shows, and thinking about you being on the show today, and all the things, all the iterations of the Red Green Show. So for people, you know, everyone's familiar with it, but just give us the genesis. Like, did it start completely fresh, or was it a skit on another show you were doing that became the Red Green Show? Just give us the genesis of it.
Yeah, well, it was back in 1978. My wife and I were doing a show called Smith and Smith. It was kind of like a Canadian Sonny and Cher.
The Comedy Mill?
Comedy Mill was after that. This was before. We actually did a pilot in 76 and got picked up for a few episodes, and we did that for, I think, 4.5 years. Anyway, in 1978, and I would have these things, I would do these little 1 minute or 2 minute bits as the supposedly funny guy, and so I created a character making fun of Red Fisher, who had Scuttlebutt Lodge and wrote poems and all kinds of stuff, and he had that gravelly voice, and, you know, I would say things like, nothing I like better than ducking, you know, to see a bird falling out of the sky. You know, they get into kind of an end-over-end thing. You see that coming down through the sunset, makes you want to crack open a 50. Yeah. So that was really the genesis of it. And then I did that for years. And then we did Comedy Mill. And then I wanted to do something really simple, because Comedy Mill was very complicated. It had funding, and I had to do all kinds of reports and paperwork and everything. I just wanted to make it simple. Mm-hmm. So I went into CHCH and I said, I need you to give me enough money that I can do something, but not enough that you care what it is.
That's great.
And that became the Red Green Show, because I always enjoyed doing the character. And then we just expanded it to, you know, the handyman stuff and the duct tape and all that.
Well, that's what I was sort of getting at, is that it started as a bit on another show.
Yes.
And then over the years, it became, well, I guess it became more than you could have ever imagined.
Oh, my God. You know, our first shoot of the Red Green Show was in December of 1989. That was 35 years ago. I mean, the last episode we shot in November of 2005. And when I was touring, a 10-year-old kid would come up to me, and he's a fan of the show. And I would say, this is, I'm talking 2-3 years ago. And I'd say, well, you know, when we quit doing the show, you weren't born. And when we started doing the show, your dad wasn't born.
I mean, that's right.
Crazy. No, it's just ridiculous. I will say that, it's a very unique brand, and you know, I used to say on PBS that the Red Green Show is kind of like the flu. Not everybody gets it, you know, but the ones that do, like, they really get it, and they know that it's hard to come by, and they become like country music fans. They're very loyal.
But you talk about keeping it simple and having that conversation with CHCH TV. Once they agree to it, having to churn these things out at the number you did, a lot of pressure goes, there's a lot of pressure involved there too, right? Like,
yeah,
episode after episode and writing it. Did you write most of it, or did you hire writers? Like,
yeah, I was always the head writer. I wrote probably half of everything, and I fixed the other half. That's how I feel about it. But one thing I do have, there's two things I have. One is I'm really, really persistent, and the other one is I don't seem to have a problem generating ideas and stuff. In fact, one of the reasons after I stopped doing the show, one of the reasons I went back to either writing books or touring was because, you know, that guy that thinks he's funny and just is annoying to all his friends? That was me, okay? So I needed a larger group to share that annoyance, and that's what got me back into performance.
Well, I think we've spoken to you in the when you were launching your touring show. So we went from a skit to a series that lasted a long time. By the way, we started in August of 1989, so we predate Red Green by just a few months.
Wow, there you
go. But believe me, we haven't had anywhere near the success. But we're still here, we're doing this. So you went from the show ends, and I know we spoke to you about you going on touring. And what exactly was that? Were you a one-man show as Red Green?
Yeah, yeah. And my first tour was my Wit and Wisdom tour. My idea was I was going to just do a U.S. tour and give all the money to PBS. So I'd go into a Minneapolis PBS station, and they'd sell the tickets, and they'd keep all the money. All they had to do was cover my travel expenses. But I enjoyed it so much. And then I got approached by a promoter to do a Canadian tour with that same show. Which I ended up doing. And honestly, you know, I've been in show business a long time. That going out in front of a live audience that came to see me. So anybody who's ambivalent about me is not there.
No, you know? Those are your super fans, your P1s.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, holy cow. You know, and like I said earlier, the comments after the show, one guy in his 20s said, "You made me look forward to getting old."
But give me some context. How long were you out doing, like, a 90-minute show, an hour 20? What were you doing?
Yeah, it was 90 minutes. Like, we had an intermission so we could sell stuff, and then I would do a meet and greet afterwards. And we did, I would do between 35 and 40 shows in the U.S. That'd be a 6-week tour, and then come and do the same thing in Canada.
And what size of venues are we talking about?
You know, around 1,000. Some of them were bigger. Some would maybe be 3,000. I did Ramo. That was 5,200.
Wow.
And it was full. But generally smaller, you know, the smaller venues. But it was just me. There was like four of us on the road. Gross and net were the same number.
Well, I was going to say, yeah. At some point, did you say to yourself, God damn, why didn't I think of this earlier? Because that's where a lot of money is.
Yeah, but there wouldn't be anybody there. You know,
that's true.
I had to build the demand and then control the supply.
So the animated series, animation's a lot simpler nowadays than it used to be. What made you want to do this? Like, I know about Brett Butt with the corner gas. That animation transition went well, I believe.
Yeah. It was a bunch of factors. One is that the way I stay young is by always doing new things. So the longer I keep repeating the old thing, the older I get. So when I finished the show, I wrote books and I toured. And then when I finished touring, I started doing a podcast with my son and a bunch of actors from the show and some voice actors that had never been involved with the show. And then once we were in our fifth season of doing that, and we thought, well, the next step would be to turn some of that into an animated series. My other son is kind of in that world, so he has he knows how to do animation, and he has a friend who's really good at it, and away we went. So we could kind of do it close to the bone again, and you know, independently. And then we linked up with Answer Media out of Kansas, who really wanted to take the whole Red Green brand and see what they could do with it. And
wow.
Animation, we're doing better in streaming with the old episodes than we ever did syndicating. So
amazing.
It's a new world.
And as far as the animated series goes, so this we went from the skit on your old show to a series to you touring and books and the podcast. Is the podcast as Red Green, or is it a Red Green fan podcast? Or like, is it still the same world that you've created?
Absolutely, and it's not even a podcast. It's a radio show.
It's a radio show, right?
Old school. That's how I grew up. I made a crystal radio when I was 8 years old. My brother and I had bunk beds with metal springs. I used the metal springs as an aerial, and we had walkie-talkies as speakers. And we would listen to Jack Benny Show or Armis Brooks. And what happened for me was it really developed my imagination, because I had to imagine all the scenes. If I heard an explosion, I had to imagine that thing blowing up. And I think it really helped me in my later life and what I chose to do as a career to have that imagination developed. So that's what I was trying to do with the podcast. It's 100% scripted.
Right.
And it's all different characters and quite different than the TV show, because the TV show is still out there. I didn't want to, get my own way.
So the TV show, but you're doing the animation now, so no real conflict that way?
Like, you're not animating old episodes, you're animating new episodes with new content.
Episodes.
Yeah, everything's brand new, yeah.
So new scripts, of new writing, all that. Wow.
Oh my God, yeah. I write over the winter, and then we record it all through the summer. So I mean, last winter I wrote 161 segments. I know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend is in town. I know that, my buddy. I'm actually having dinner. Actually, I'm having breakfast with him. It's a full Lumbee day for me Saturday.
Holy cow!
I know it's a long. You know what? So I'm having breakfast with him and I'm having dinner. So I won't. You know, I haven't seen him for a while. I'll just jam it all in. So and he's still doing his character, Winston.
Oh yeah, he does several characters. He is so good, and you know, he lives in France, and
I do.
We would record, our side, and then send it to him, and then he'd record his side, and then we'd put them all together. But last year, he was in town, and we could go back to the way we used to do it, where he sits. I'm actually right in the place where we do the podcast from. And we could. It's just so much better when he's sitting across.
Yeah, of course.
But he is so good. He's so talented. We had this character on the show called Old Man Sedgwick, who you never saw, but he was really old. Like his grandson was 90. You know, and so Lumbee like took that on. And, oh my God, just nailed it, because it is Lumbee. He's an angry man, and I love him.
Listen, Steve, I have a call with him every Sunday morning, and just as the Zoom. He does this. He's like, you just hear him getting warmed up.
Yeah, I know. He's great.
So where will the, give me a couple things here. So now the podcast is available where podcasts are available, and it's called the Red Green Show or Red Green.
I think it's the Possum Lodge podcast, I think it's called.
Okay.
But if you did Red Green podcast, I'm sure you'll find it.
And what about the animated series? What's it called and when will it be available?
It's called Red Green More Animated, and it's available now to Lodge members. Like this company, Answer Media, like I say, they've taken over the whole brand. So one of their marketing things is they for a while they offer things only to Lodge members, and then they roll it out from there. But they'd look after all the streaming. If you buy I think it's a Samsung TV. If you buy a Samsung TV in Canada, it comes with a red-green channel.
So, wow. I mean,
that's them. So they're
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And syndication. So how many actual episodes of red-green did you?
There were exactly 300.
So 300. So they're out there just, and you just keep getting checks for them because they're out there on all sorts of services?
Yeah. Like they, I don't know a lot about this, but one thing they did tell me was that the average streaming length that somebody will watch something is like 2 minutes and 10 seconds. And our average is 66 minutes. So, and I think it's because, well, first of all, it's a very unique brand, but also there are so many episodes, it's easy just to binge. I mean, you know, you can just say, oh, I'll watch another one. You know, I'll watch another one.
Yeah. Well, and just before we wrap up, a lot of people ask us, you know, Fred's 68, I'm 64, you're of some age. Why are you guys still doing this?
I'll be 80 next year.
That's crazy, man.
Think about that.
What?
Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure people tell you this, you look great, but this makes my point. Why would we all still be doing this? Because as you said, because it keeps being interested in this, being active, mm-hmm. keeps you young, keeps you, because people ask me this, you know, Freddie, when are you guys going to stop doing it? I go, I don't know, never, maybe. Why would we? What else am I going to do? What would I be doing on a Tuesday morning if we weren't doing this and having this great conversation? I don't know.
Right, it's our best option. I got a friend who owns 4 or 5 car dealerships in Hamilton, and he's an older guy. And I said, "Yeah, when are you going to retire?" And he says, "I'm not going to retire. I don't want to be irrelevant." And I thought, that has a ring to it.
Well, for somebody like you and even us, it would be frustrating to not being able to exercise that muscle. And in fact, I've often said, Howard and I have said, if we were just retired, what we do in our spare time is probably have a podcast. So there you go.
No, exactly.
We're so fortunate to be doing something we really like. You know, we're like 1% of the world.
Mm. Well, that's the other thing I tell people, like, a lot of my peer group, guys I golf with, that just couldn't wait to retire, even if they were doing well and had a decent company or whatever, and they're like, I loved what I've done. We took a couple days off. I couldn't wait to come back because I had stuff I wanted to talk about. So I wanted to share stuff with Fred.
Yeah. I retired from things I didn't want to do on the second day. I didn't wait till I was 65.
That's great.
Well, and often when people, my wife says it sometimes, and my friends, they'll say, talking about this show, are you working tomorrow? And I just find it amusing when they use the word, are you working tomorrow?
Right.
Yeah, okay, if that's what you want to call it.
Yep, no, exactly. listen, I you know, great to be pumping more content out. Shive, your 80th birthday. We'll be looking for, and how do people sign? How do we become lodge members?
Not a clue.
Okay, that's fine. You know what? There's people that do. I figure you just go Google.
You've got people.
You got people. Yeah, you don't need
Google.
To worry about this stuff.
Possum Lodge. Yeah.
All right,
Google,
man.
Possum
Lodge. Well, listen. I'll tell Lumby that we had a laugh with you. That's great. Yeah, Steve, I'm going to start calling him Old Man Sedgwick.
Okay.
That's
and keep
great.
Him away from the coffee, will you?
Oh my God! All right, listen, Steve Smith. Congratulations on another. A chapter.
Milestone.
Take care and all the best. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
Perfect. Okay, see you, Steve.
There you go.
Yeah.
Steve Smith, for God's sake. Look at him. It's funny that all Lumby's friends, like me and Dan and you, guys that have known Steve, all of us, everyone has a Lumby impression. It's just usually some angry ranting. Oh, this is brutal. Just brutal. Let yourself out, Steve.
Okay.
There you go.
See you later.
See ya.
Yeah, I'm sorry you're going to miss the big Lumby dinner on Saturday night.
Yes. Something got, life got in the way.
Huh? Yeah, I know. Hey, I want you to do a little thing for us here, and in a second I'm going to tell you about an experience I had on Saturday night that... it's just interesting. I think you'll find it of interest.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Let me just call something up.
Do your business.
Because I have a copy here regarding a visit by the Sherpa. Let me just see. I'm sorry. You've caught me a bit off guard, and I want to get it right for these.
Well, listen,
guys,
okay? We're here. We're here for you. Take your time. No pressure.
Okay. Tim Niblett, portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Tomorrow's edition will feature Jay Bondy, and the topic will be investment management. Rules of thumb, okay? Last week, Tim did a great job of speaking to you all about the specifics of the RESP. This week, I thought we'd focus our time on some general rules of thumb when it comes to investing. So that's what we're going to do. All right. He'll go through some of the rules and what they're all about, and you will be better for it. That's the Retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca.
Ex-wife Randy and I went to a comedy concert on Saturday night at what is now called the called Meridian Hall.
Oh.
Do you know what Meridian Hall is? It used to be the Sony Center. At one time, it was the O'Keefe Center.
Right.
Hummingbird Center.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't been there in a long time. And the reason I thought of you while I was at this comedy event... Because we often talk about how people that are into country music, like there's this whole genre of music that,
yes,
you know, I'm not familiar with really, neither are you. And yet there's artists in that genre that sell out, you know, the Toby Keiths and the, these guys, I could come up with somebody else. You know what I mean? Like they sell out Zach Brown, all these guys.
Mm-hmm. Post Malone's over there now.
And I know, I vaguely know who they are, but there's a whole other genre, a whole other bunch of them that sell out, you know, big, yes, arenas.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to a concert. There was two people on the show. It was a 90-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline act sold out two shows. The 7 o'clock show that we went to and the 9 o'clock show at the Meridian Hall there. That's 3,100 people per show, 6,200 tickets. Mm-hmm. We were on, my back was against the wall of the final balcony. That's how far away we were. And our tickets were $150 a piece. So if you're on the floor, those are $250 and three.
And why did you go?
I'm going to tell you. And the thing is, I'm a fan of this guy. And so is Randy.
Okay.
But I guarantee you, you've never heard of him. Mm-hmm. His name is Mark Normand. Have you ever heard of that guy?
No.
Absolutely. I knew it. There's about 15 or 20 guys like Mark Normand, who I'm big fans of. Tom Segura. Tons of guys like this that are out there doing... You know what that gross is for Saturday night? It's like $1.2 million. That this kid, he's like in his late 30s, can sell out, and this is Canada. He's doing this all across Canada. I mean, Toronto, I should say. He's doing it all across Canada, all across the states.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, you know, how we're in this time in the world where there's, you know, never been a bigger appetite for stand-up comedy. Now, Mark Normand, tons of Instagram followers, a couple of Netflix specials. Of course, he's on all the talk shows. But... my buddy Fred has never heard of this guy, and he did $1 million gross on Saturday night.
Crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy.
And was the show good?
It was fantastic.
Oh no.
He's like, you're talking about somebody at the top of the game, at the top of their game. Like, he's one of the, again, he's in that, maybe not as, you know, he's not as famous, obviously. You know, Chris Rock and Seinfeld and Rogan and Jim Gaffigan, all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But he's at the tier below that can do 3,100 people on a Saturday night twice in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I, you know.
Isn't that something?
It is something. And the average, like, if we were paying $150 for balconies, so the average price in that hall had to be north of $200.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're, and I just sat there thinking, you know, this is crazy. Like, I really didn't think, when she said, we're going to the show, I told her about it. I said, we should go. This was months ago. And I didn't remember or realize that Meridian Hall was the Hummingbird Center. I didn't. I just thought we were seeing them at something like the Danforth Music Hall, you know, 1,000 people and prices, whatever, you know.
And they do their research. They know before they book a place what the potential is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the another interesting dynamic to this is you have a new lady friend and you go out with your ex-wife. That's an interesting dynamic in itself right there.
Yeah, and you know, my new lady friend,
like, I told
her about it. Well, we were like, she and I were together, you know, Friday night, part of Saturday, all day Sunday. And I said, just so you know, I'm going to this show with ex-wife Randy. You know, I said, this was booked months ago. And we had a nice chat about it. And she was totally cool with it. And the reason I said, you know, I had no doubt you would be cool with it because you're just the kind of person that, you know, wouldn't mind it.
You know how fantastic that is? How mm-hmm. unique that is?
And well, no, I'm very lucky.
Well, you are, and she is, and everyone is, because it's the way it should be. But very rarely is. The guy who hosted Saturday Night Live this weekend.
Nate Bargatze. Love the guy.
Yeah, that, you know, and Darren, man, likes him as well. And I sat and I watched the opening segment or whatever, and then, you know, he made that note. He really likes that comic. And he said, you know this guy? And I said, you know, I think Howard's mentioned him. But it's like, you know, maybe I am with the detail of sport, not so much with that world, and vice versa with you and I. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's a passion. Like, somebody really has to become prominent in that world for me to sort of latch on. You know what I mean?
Well, Nate Bar, this is the second time he's hosted. He hosted last fall. We had this conversation because... Yeah. You know, again, guy like me that likes country music, meaning stand-up comedy. I've been following Nate Bargatze for the better part of 20 years. Mm-hmm. And now, and I had this conversation with you at the time saying he's stand-up comedy famous, got to host Saturday Night Live, one of the best episodes of the year last year. They bring him back for this season. Mm-hmm. Nate Bargatze would sell out the Scotiabank Center or whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing arena tours. Forget the Hummingbird or whatever, the Meridian Hall. Nate Bargatze is out doing 20,000 people a night.
Jesus. Wow.
And again, similarly to Mark Normand, you could ask 100 people on the street and maybe two or three would know who Nate Bargatze was.
Yeah.
But the same thing with like Luke Bryan or Zach, whatever we mention. Like, who was that famous country music star or this young guy we had on our show? It turned out to be like way more famous in the world, or he became more famous. Do you remember this?
Jeez.
You kind of know what I'm talking about.
I can't come up with a name. I can barely remember my own.
Yeah. There's a, like, there's another guy that, a guy named Tony Hinchcliffe, who is he's got a thing on YouTube called Kill Tony. He's super comedy famous, but I just mentioned him on this show, and most people have no idea who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's I mean, I'm not surprised. Listen, I would give you a couple of specials of Nate Bargatze's that you would absolutely love. You'd piss yourself, as you would like to say. Really,
well,
he's really funny and really down home and folks. He doesn't swear.
You know, it's a hunker down season, so you know, you get your list and you start going through it.
Well, I'll send you a link to his latest special that was on Amazon Prime. And he's really good. Anyway, that was what I was just thinking about you on Saturday night. There I was at a guy. It was, you know, I paid $150 a seat to see somebody that, you know, my good friend Frederick P. would have no idea who he was, and yet the place was jammed. They had a guy do 20 minutes as an opener, and then this kid came out and did an hour and 10 minutes, and just everything was super, super funny, like really funny. He's another...
That in itself, you know, talking to Steve Smith, is, you know, pen to paper and writing.
Yeah.
So, you know, write stuff, and then write it, but then it's got to be funny and make sense and be clever. And all these comics that you talk about, you know, I mean, all the concepts that are used, it's like, how do you come up with new stuff all the time without thinking, this is so funny, somebody somewhere must have said something
that's
like
right.
this. You know, like, it's crazy.
Another guy that we know is back on tour. He's doing a Ontario tour now. Uh-huh. Friend of show Ron James is out there. And there's another guy clocking 2,000-seat theaters 25 or 30 times on a tour.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to do the math, it's a pretty good math.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. So that's that. I just thought I'd pass that on.
And just to back up with Steve, too, and again, because you and I like to think about the money. Did you hear what he said? He's making more money off Red Green now through syndication than he did.
No, through streaming.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, streaming, well, he did say, I thought he did say some syndication, too, so. Because I know it's still on some stations, regular TV stations as well. But anyway, it's crazy how that all works.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing about doing a show like this, or something like we've done, there's no residual opportunity. Whereas what he's done is created nothing but residual opportunities. As you say, streaming or syndication, the podcast. They do that podcast for money.
Mm-hmm.
You know that, and I know, and again, our friend Lumby, you know, I'm sure Red or Red, I'm sure Steve has told the story, but I was going to have him retell the story of how he and Lumby met. He was a guest on Jeff's show when Jeff was doing a morning show in Kitchener at the time, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they got along, or now that I think of it, I think they met, they were in part of a parade or something, and Red Green had been on for just a couple years, and Jeff and he hit it off. Well, that meeting has turned into 25 years of Lumby making money off this character.
Right. No, it's a great story. It really is.
Yeah, I'm trying to find
out. You know, when it gets back, and again, I'm fascinated by a guy like Steve Smith. Him in particular, because he's the Canadian Order of Canada. Just the perseverance of it all. Because we've often talked here, you know, when you bring people in to do a podcast, they do one or two and then lose interest. Well, you just think putting all that television stuff together in the early stages, the way Steve Smith, he kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. Because it can't be successful without a product, you know.
Exactly.
You got to produce the product, and he kept doing it. And it's just, it's a great story. It just is.
And the fact that he's 79 years old and he's still pumped out, you know, 100 plus, you know, bits this year. Here's a, you know, I was paraphrasing this comic's bit about Ozempic. Here's actually a little clip of Mark Norman.
That's a fun one, huh?
Ozempic. Because
I know people who are like, hey, I'm not getting that vaccine. I don't know what's in that. Might have some side effects. Well, there's this new drug. We're not really too sure about it, but it makes you lose weight without having to work out. Go ahead and put that right in my asshole. That one could be dangerous, too. Hey, if it makes me hotter, fuck it. You know? That's all we care about. By the way, during the COVID, it was all fat people who were dying. We should just fuck the vaccine. Just fucking get those guys out of there. They'd still be here. Yeah. Also, what the hell? The last 5 years, all I heard is like, hey, big is beautiful, and don't fat shame, and body positivity. Well, here's a new drug that'll, you know, make you thin without having to work out. Like I said, put that right in my asshole, and...
So that's this guy's style. He's very funny, very... And a lot of topical stuff. I've seen a lot of his stuff, but on Saturday night, like, I'd say 90% of it is brand spanking new material. I mean, think what to your point. Think about coming up with that and touring it, you know, every couple of years.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, stuff comes organically or when there's no pressure on, but all of a sudden it's now you have to come up with this. You talk about the people that suffer or talk about writer's block and... You know, I guess it just what separates the pros from the non-pros or the big boys from the little boys.
Anyhow, we're waiting.
All about.
We're waiting for Brad Jones. Dan, if you're listening, you can come back right now, and then maybe we can squeeze. Brad's one of those people. He was told 8:55. Let me see when he's supposed to be on here. I think it's 8:50.
8:50.
So we've got a couple more minutes. You know what we can do in the meantime?
Yes. We can talk about Bodog.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
You know, the NHL season is upon us, the NFL season. Yeah, I think the NHL season actually begins tonight. And the NFL season is beyond us. It's upon us, is what I'm saying.
Is it beyond us?
So, I mean, just two sports you can wager on. But again, golf and tennis and all the European soccer matches, it's all there. And then there's gaming with the poker and, you know, the race books. And it's all there at Bodog. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker, a casino player, Bodog, your number one source of online gambling entertainment. From their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, to their fully loaded casino and racebook, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. Yes, they've been around that long, providing gaming entertainment for the masses. Bodog.
You know what you can also do is you can hang out at Kelsey's while you're thinking about the bets you may want to make. Kelsey's loves happy hour so much they celebrate it twice a day. That's a lot of happiness. $5 draft beer, wine, and mixed drinks, and $10 appetizers every day from 3 to 5 and 8 until close, only at Kelsey's, the original Roadhouse. And lest we not forget, what am I trying to say? Don't forget, Kelsey's has half-price wing Wednesdays, and don't miss half-price wings on Thursdays. That is ridiculous. Conditions apply. Dine in only. And for more information on this wonderful organization where you can get not only wings, you can get some great food. I always forget what you ate there.
Oh, the buffalo chicken sandwich.
The buffalo chicken sandwich. Check out their menu. Visit Kelsey's.ca or your local Kelsey's for details. Yes.
Email from Nancy McLeod Elder, and this will be interesting. She says, "Hi, guys. I'm sure you already heard this, but in case you forgot, Howard Stern interviewing Kamala Harris at 1 o'clock on Sirius Channel 100 should be epic." I don't know about epic to me, because when I had heard that she was going to be on with Stern, I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if Stern would get Trump on and just go at him? Because he would.
No, he wouldn't do Trump. And Trump would never do Stern again.
He wouldn't do Stern, no. Because he's a coward, of course.
Yeah, same reason he wouldn't do 60 Minutes.
Yeah, but I just thought, given their relationship, Stern and Trump, wouldn't it be cool if Howard could sit him down and go, what the fuck's wrong with
you? What happened to you?
It would never happen, but this is powerful for Howard Stern to do Kamala. 20,000, or 20 million... listeners.
Yeah, they I haven't seen the 60 Minutes interview yet. I want to. But yeah, I mean, Trump won't go anywhere where he's not in control, or there's a safety factor there. You know, somebody knows. You know, one of the things when they talked about why he backed out of the 60 Minutes interview is because of the fact checking. And as they said on 60 Minutes, we fact check all our stories.
And in real time, during the interview, yes. Bill, like Leslie Stahl, will go, well, wait a minute, that's not true, right? But he doesn't want any part of that.
He's such a baby. He actually wanted 60 Minutes to apologize to him for how mean Leslie was last time. Okay, well, here comes, you know what, here comes Brad Jones. Finally make some more sense on this program. There he is.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, brother?
Not a whole lot.
Well, I disagree. I'm sorry, I was just sneezing there. Turn my mic off for a minute. Brad is, of course, we had our, you know, introduction to all things Ridley Funeral Homes, RidleyFuneralHome.com. We're going to get to some nuts and bolts of what Brad's up to and what you can expect from the service there. But I understand, and it seems to me we're only on recently. You just got back from Greece?
Yeah, I got in around 5 o'clock our time yesterday.
And where in Greece did you go, Brad?
We did Athens, did a tour around Athens. We were in Rhodes. We went to Santorini, a few other places.
I've been to Santorini. Isn't it magical? Mm. It really is.
It is. It's full of people, though.
Oh, was it still crowded?
It was so crowded, yeah. Wow. I suspect everyone that was planning to go to Florida went to Greece.
Mm-hmm. Was that one? Is that a thing you had always wanted to do? Why Greece? Is it something you, some family connection, or just?
It was just by circumstance. We work with our Slovenian church in our community, and they go on these trips every year. So they've been to, they've gone to Spain, they've gone to Argentina. They've asked us a few times to come, and it hasn't worked out. So this summer we got invited again. So we decided to go with them.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What, and the food was great. The whole vibe was cool.
Everything was great. You know, I think I gained like 5 to 10 pounds by the feels of my suit today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the food is good there.
It really lots is. Of it. Yeah.
As for today's edition, sorry, in the notes here we have that your father-in-law passed away recently.
He did. Yeah. Yeah. About a week before we left for Greece.
No, sorry to hear that.
Well, that's yeah, thank tough. You. But it's sort of like a technical question. I know, like, doctors aren't supposed to have family members or friends as clients, right, or patients. What's the situation with you? Would you deal with your father-in-law's passing?
No, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. We did. Yeah, and it was nice because, you know, being a family-owned business, all the family was able to participate, all the... not all, but most of the grandkids helped put him in a casket, you know, to spend some time here with them. So it was, in some ways, it's, you know, the last thing you can do for somebody for mm-hmm. us, right? So, yeah. You know, it was the same thing when both my parents have died a few years. Well, my dad a few years ago, my mom back in 98. But both those circumstances, I took care of a lot of the arrangements, and I even did the preparation back then.
Well, that's, I guess, why, wow. And that Fred opened that up, that there's a lot that goes into preparing somebody mm-hmm. for internment. Is that the word? Internment?
Yeah, internment.
And yep. you were comfortable doing those preparations for not only your parents, but for your wife's parents?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, you feel kind of honored to be able to do that, you know? You know, I'm not smart enough to be a doctor to help save people. So at least now I can use my skills and do what I do really well and you know, be that that guiding hand. And, you know, we were with my father-in-law when he died. And it was interesting, you know, being on that side and the emotions that are going into mm-hmm. it. You know, once the death was, you know, confirmed and the doctor gave us a death certificate, it's amazing how my brain just switched over into, you know, the funeral director mode, and, you know, it just kicked in and I started just doing things almost automatically.
Mm-hmm. Now, would that be common, or do you think, you know, there might be people that run funeral homes in that situation might go, you know, we're going to give it over to someone else? But I guess that's a hard question to answer. But would you assume that most people in your position would do the same thing?
Yeah, I think most people that, you know, have a funeral home for sure. A lot of the ones in small town Ontario have no choice. You know, they're the only show for, you know, a couple hundred kilometers around. So if their family member dies, they're the ones that are doing it anyhow. But I find most people that are funeral directors, you know, when there is a family death, they want to participate. You know, it might not be the full extent, but there's yeah. parts of it that they want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's maybe a jumping off point for a conversation about, you know, you said you were with your father-in-law at the end. Did he have some final wishes or how he wanted his funeral to go, and said, hey, Brad, could you take care of this? And secondly, which I guess is for the wider question being asked, which is, do you recommend that when people are thinking about a funeral, that they come in and have those conversations prior?
Yeah, no, I think with my father-in-law, we've had those conversations, you know, for years now. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, between him and I, we've updated things here and there. And, you know, whether it was music selections or things he wanted done, you know, so he was cremated you know, his ashes are going to be some buried at his family plot, and some are going to be scattered up at the cottage. And so, you know, we've got plans for all of that. But yeah, we recommend that families actually have that conversation with each other to start with, because that's where everything should begin. So you're, you know, your kids know what you want, or your spouse knows what you want. And then I think, you know, it'd be healthy to actually go into a funeral home and actually have those discussions and say, you know, this is what we're thinking about. You know, this is what we want to have done, and, you know, put down some information on paper. It doesn't cost you anything to put, you know, ideas down on paper with a funeral home. If you decide you want to prepay, then that's where it would cost you some money, but it saves you in the future.
You know, when people put that stuff off, right, for whatever reason, they don't like to think about it, and then so often it comes back to bite you in the ass because it was, yeah, we had those conversations, we never got around to it, and now we got a little bit of chaos here, we're not quite sure what he would have wanted or what she would have wanted or where to go with this, and it's just so important just to get around to it because it makes things simpler, obviously.
It does. It makes life a little bit easier. It doesn't take away the grief, right? Like, mm-hmm.
No.
You know, that's still going to be there. But it just makes that whole process so much easier that you don't have to, you know, make all those decisions. And, mm-hmm. and again, you'd be second guessing yourself, right? Because you can't even go back and check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't say, is this what you really wanted? You know,
mm-hmm.
So having those conversations to start with is important. But, you know, putting it down on paper, it just takes a lot of the burden off of the family.
And doesn't cost, as you said, there's no cost to doing that if you want to have that conversation. And maybe that's how it should begin, I guess, for our listeners. RidleyFuneralHome.com is how you get a hold of Brad Jones. And I'm sure Brad would welcome that conversation so that, you know, it's almost like, you know, sometimes people don't like to have financial conversations, but this, no, which is awkward,
thing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This has got to be even more awkward for most people.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, most of us want to think that if we don't talk about it, it won't happen.
Right. We're going to live forever.
Right. But, you know, when you guys started out in this this industry, you looked a lot younger than you do right now.
Oh, come on. Really?
Same as myself. You know, I got a lot more gray than I have non-grays hair now. But it's, you know, you as you get older, you start to actually think about it a little bit more. But, you know, sometimes having that conversation with your kids is difficult because your kids are not thinking of it that way and they don't want to think of you as dying.
Yeah.
No, it's true. And I got to be honest with you. In my late 60s now, more and more, I'm having those thoughts of, you know, and it keeps happening. Over the weekend, a few more guys in their 80s died. Like, I'm late 60s, guys in Howard's mid-60s. Guys die in Canada in their early to mid 80s, it seems, and that's not that far away.
Yeah.
So at some point you've got to think, okay, what exactly am I going to do with these last precious 15 to 18 years, you know? Really?
Yeah, you know, and sometimes having those conversations, it makes it a little bit more real for your family.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you can maybe start living your life with no regrets, right? Like, you can start saying, hey, you know what, you know, this is what I think. This is what I believe. You know, and you can tell your loved ones that you love them. Tell them that you care about them. Because when you actually acknowledge that we're all going to die, it makes it a lot easier to have those conversations and tell the people that you love them. And, you know, and then the ones that you don't really care for, don't spend time with them. Don't waste your energy because you're not going to change them.
Well, that's, you know, that's that's not only great advice, but this is from somebody yourself that has been around a lot of death, and it's given you such a great perspective on life that having a conversation with Brad, I think is a proposition most people would be surprised at how positive it is. And the takeaway is, as you say, to enjoy what you have left, knowing that you've got at least this part of your legacy taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it makes life a little easier.
One last thing. Do you think that most I've thought about this recently. I began the show today talking about somebody that I used to look up to when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
He died at 76. And when I was 20, he was 32. I thought that was super old as a 20-year-old. But now I think 76, that's not that old. But do you think, so I've been thinking about this on the weekend. Are people more scared of death? Or are they scared of being in pain that leads to death? What's your experience?
I think a little bit of both. You know, I think the people that are, you know, afraid of pain are the ones that haven't had a lot of pain in their life. you know, whether it be physical or emotional. And the ones that are afraid of death are the ones that haven't acknowledged it, have denied death, haven't really been participating or around death for most of their life. Mm-hmm. So it's something that they're afraid of. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, for some people that are afraid of death, it's they're afraid of the unknown. You know, right. They're afraid of what happens after this.
Well, I can tell you, I was on stage a lot in my life as a stand-up comic, and I have died a few times. Don't believe me. There's been a couple of major deaths. Listen.
Probably a couple of times you wish you did die.
Oh, no. Listen, man, there's been a couple of times I died so bad that I had to throw out the clothes I was wearing because they smelled. Life's Undertaking is the name of Brad's podcast that he does with our good friend and producer, Toronto Mike. And always great catching up with you every couple of weeks now. And great to have Ridley Funeral Homes as part of our... Oh, little Greek music for you. Here we go.
Yeah, perfect. Just reminds me like where I went yesterday.
Opa!
Opa!
RidleyFuneralHome.com. Always a pleasure catching up with Brad Jones. All right, my friend. Take care.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate you.
Hey, Brad.
There you go. That's some wisdom right there. That's what that is. You don't get that on everybody's podcast. Well, his and ours. Thanks, Brad.
And you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I have lately been thinking about that. And again, over the weekend, I heard a couple more guys in their 80s, notable people. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's the responsible thing to do on some level. You can't go overboard, is to think about that. You know, on average, I got like 15 years here, 16 years. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to handle it? How are you going to prepare for it? How are you going to make decisions going forward because of it? A lot to think about.
Well, and as I mentioned to you at the beginning of the show today, that I spent, I'm not often given to like extended periods of melancholy or depression. I really haven't been. I've been lucky. Right. You know, I get bummed out, but I usually get in and out of it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But Sunday, yeah. New lady friend came over, and we went to yoga. But for about an hour before she came over, I was, again, listening to those tapes, and then I got nostalgic for my little career and thinking about how, you know, Dan, I played that thing of Dan because Dan, thinking about how long have I known Dan Duran? Mm-hmm. And yeah, all of it is thinking about. And by the way, you said something that I also thought of, which is, you know, the when people will Google us, I also thought about
huge,
you know, what's the when. So in the broadcast dialogue, it's a broadcast magazine, when somebody mm-hmm. dies, the way they put it is, like, Doc Harris signed off recently, you know? And yes. I thought, well, one day that's going to be you and me.
Yes.
Humble and Fred, or Fred Patterson of the Humble and Fred Show, did his last sports cast today. You know, Humble Howard told his last dick joke.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I guess, you know, people coming up through the business or through life can learn from it. Because to bring this back to the Google thing and radio, I think I may have made this point on the show or to you off the show. Look at John Derringer. Google him right now.
Yeah.
And of all the success he had and the apparent money they paid him to go away, what is it worth when your name is Googled and it says that? And the effect that that has for his daughters to see, for his grandkids, eventual grandkids to see, because it's not going away. So, you know, that whole behavior thing now has a whole new dimension. You know, we often talk about in the old days, politicians, sports figures, they could do anything, get away with anything. There was almost like a click of, you know, within reporters, you didn't mention certain things. That's changed. Well, so now you Google someone's name and it's there. It's something to think about.
Yeah, and that's the drag of Trump is that there are now reporters that won't talk about, you know, and again, we come down to, well, CNN's just like Fox, and no, it's not.
No, it's
anyways,
don't insult me with that.
Dan Duran is back. Mm-hmm. That means we're going to be doing the news. Hello, Daniel.
Hello.
Do you ever think about dying someday, my friend?
Oh, I think about it.
Yeah? Oh.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what Brad Jones just said there He said, sometimes people think if you don't talk about it, it will go away. Or right. if you don't talk about it, it won't right. happen to me. And then I was going to, like, lean forward into the mic and say, like Dan with his colonoscopy.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, that's right, what? Dan. That's not going away. Dan's asshole is going to stay.
Actually, in fact, somebody sent us a story this weekend about, you know, the silent killer, the no symptoms.
No symptoms, cancers.
Yep.
Anyways, on tomorrow's show, tomorrow we have a show, Dan, and tomorrow, hopefully this happens. Noel Kassler is scheduled to return.
Fantastic. That's great news.
I follow Noel. Noel, somewhere along the way, Noel, I think, was overloaded with all this attention, has disabled his comments on his Twitter feed. But I follow him. I read him every day. And I'm so excited. And I know you would be, too, to have Noel back on our program. It's been too long. And, yeah, well, it'll be a full episode of some insights into the world of U.S. politics. And then a week from tomorrow, we'll be talking Canadian politicking with Tony Clement. In the meantime, let's have a little palate cleanser here. The fun and frivolity that is...
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man, his voice is nice and low. Huh. Dan Duran, the anchor man comes, as for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now, live from his fancy pants trailer, it's the Dan Duran News, brought to you by Boron One. Boron One is taking boron out of the ground eventually, and it will help grow your portfolio. For more information, go to boron1.com now. With more information, news, and views, is Daniel J. Giebert-Durand.
A Canadian physicist called the Godfather of AI, which he now regrets doing, won a Nobel Peace Prize. Trump says some races have a murder gene. Didn't know that. And the smart people of X, that would be formerly called Twitter, in order to get their platform unbanned in Brazil, paid a $5 million fine to the wrong bank. So they didn't pay their fine after all. Speaking of Brazil,
no.
How big does it have to be? Cub reporter Fred Patterson brings us this story, and yes, we're talking penis size. Okay, so this guy had penis augmentation surgery in Brazil, where they do such things, but this guy, he's 7 feet tall. Now, at 7 feet, you'd think that, you know, his thing would be proportionate.
Yeah.
But not big enough for him to, quote, ail, that's his name. It not only got bigger, but also thicker. The doctor that did it registered the technique for male intimate harmonization. And in this case, Ale, who is a 33-year-old fitness trainer, likened it to a plastic bottle and admitted, I can't close my hand around it.
Wow. So given that, basically size proportions, so you're like a 7'4" man.
Yes.
You're like 7 feet 4 inches tall. Yeah. Very nice.
You know, it's funny. I sent Dan that story. It was sort of a test, I thought. I bet you he doesn't use any story about the size of a penis. Mm. So I'm quite pleasantly surprised that he did go there.
Yeah, I did do the attribution to the Cub reporter, mind you.
No, I understand that, but I just thought you would be one of those, I'm not going to talk about this, because then it'll end up back on me.
Back on me, yes, you're right.
Well, Dan, good on you. Way to finally figure out what this show is all about. Way to finally get into the flow.
On board.
Well, get on board with the show.
I read the show book.
Yeah, you've seen it. Listen, we go back a long way. Even though you don't remember doing my show back in 1982.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Foggy times.
Yeah. You have no recollection. Okay, thanks to Steve Smith, Brad Jones. Yeah, you had your finger up?
No, he had just mentioned, because I thought we had said we would mention this. He mentioned the
University of Nobel Prize. Florida. Yeah, we can always do that tomorrow.
Okay.
We can save it.
Because it's very, these guys, we often talk about it, you know, people other than us having big brains. Well, people have big brains.
Why don't we save
that? Description. Oh, no, we will. Yeah, that's fine. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
So on tomorrow's show, we'll talk about the creators of AI.
Yeah, and there's a couple other Nobel Prize. There's a medicine prize that came out.
Yeah.
There's a couple, like this week is Nobel Prize week.
And how these guys win it, it would be like you can't even begin to appreciate what goes through their brains. That's all.
Yeah, they were paying a lot more attention in school than the three of us. They paid a lot of attention. Also,
just
on the
to be
show,
the jury on the jury for those guys. So,
oh yeah, we can't get on.
You
the
know,
jury.
You got to be super smart to understand whatever they've done. Like, because how would you know?
Also on the show tomorrow, I just remember this. I did something. Saturday night that I haven't done in almost 2 years. And I'll tell you what it was like. All right, Dan.
This episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, our newest sponsor, Ridley Funeral Home, and Kelsey's Original Roadhouse. For contests and comments, we read all of our emails, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. So tell us what you think, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. And, you know, we appreciate it when you do any of these things, especially subscribing, maybe rating an episode or giving an opinion on the podcast. We would appreciate it. For Humble and Fred, from the Baldwin Sisters Zoom Theater, I'm Dan Duran. And remember, don't Google yourself and enjoy every goddamn day.
Just clap your hands. Where's that?